That might have been hot right there. We're dealing with audio problems right now.
Sound check, check, check. Microphone check.
Yeah, I'm not even listening, though. That's the thing. I'm listening, but I'm not checking.
One, two, check.
Sibilance. Check. I think we're good.
A-E-I-O-U.
Sometimes Y.
Yeah, sometimes.
Welcome to episode 376 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany. With me, as always, is
Adam, Vancouver, British Columbia.
But daylight savings, Adam.
Yeah.
You're up early, man. I'm impressed.
Yeah. This is my level of commitment to podcasting and worldwide photography entertainment.
But aren't you glad that I knew it was daylight savings, even though you didn't?
Yeah, that was helpful. Lisa would have told me, but...
Yes.
Yeah.
Lisa, yeah, being your wife.
Yeah.
As opposed to the fictional computer-created woman in Weird Science.
Right.
She would know, right. Though.
Yeah, she probably would know.
Kelly LeBrock.
Oh, that's right.
Was she not married to Steven Seagal at one point?
I think she was. It was a weird connection.
What are we doing?
Not
us. I mean Kelly LeBrock. So that would have been a very early start had we not thought about that. But anyways, Amazon. To buy all your daylight savings needs, go to Amazon. Click through our site. Help us out.
Sure. Alarm clocks.
Do you have an alarm clock still? Oh, do
still
you really?
Do. Yep, really.
Like a plug-in one?
Yep.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like a clock radio.
Yeah, I know what that is. Is it still set to C-Fox? You hear Larry and Willie in the morning?
No, I usually just have sports talk radio. Wake up to that.
Uh-huh. What is that? 1040?
Yep. The team. Gotcha.
1040 team. The team.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I thought most people have their iPhone. Siri probably takes care of it, or whatever the other version is.
Yeah, that's what my wife has.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Wow. Great talk.
Yeah.
If you do need I want the old school, like, alarm clock, though. I like things that are analog, but my wife has refused, though. She said she doesn't want to hear the little tick-tick-tick-tick-tick at night.
Hmm.
So here we are.
Yeah.
Why don't we all go sit in the corner and weep? All right. What's going on, Adam? I'll tell you what's going on before you get into what's going on.
Okay.
Made a big deal last week about audio quality. Oh, it's going to be good.
Yeah.
Audio quality, probably the best audio quality of any podcast from Tübingen.
Right.
About photography featuring a Canadian guy.
Okay.
Probably best, but
top,
it's going to be great.
Top two or three anyways.
Top five. Let's give a little breathing room. Was so excited about it, and then Skype messed us up.
Right.
Even though, here's the kicker, we don't record the Skype call.
Right.
We just Skype to talk to each other. I record here, Adam records there, and we put it together. So we don't rely on Skype, yet somehow Skype gets in the middle.
Skype is sneaky.
Yeah, what's your problem, Skype? We don't like. I'm going to move. Actually, all full disclosure, Skype, if you're listening, we're going to find somebody else for next. Well, maybe if we don't find something, we might fall back on you. Maybe no self-esteem.
Yeah.
You know. I wonder what she's doing. I'll just check her out. I'll check her out on Facebook. I don't know who's that guy. That's how we. That's my relationship with Skype. But. Yeah. Yeah, what ended up happening is Skype, despite Adam telling it not to, Skype got involved in the auto level settings of his microphone.
Yeah, it was toggle switch turned off.
Yeah.
Still Skype said, no.
Yeah.
No, you won't turn that toggle switch off. I will still control your audio settings.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Hal. Just leave us alone. Leave us alone. So that was the reason last week's. I mean, the audio still was better, but then there was a lot of clipping. And so just so you know, I think we fixed it this week. Hopefully we have. Otherwise, we're all just going to quit.
Yeah.
All right. So what's going on with you, Adam? I think you probably had a more fun day yesterday than I did. And my day was fine. That's not setting up for drama. I just saw some photos and looks like you had a good day.
Oh, I didn't. Oh, yeah, because I'd gone to Granville Island. Maybe my wife posted something. I don't know.
I'm looking at the picture you posted right now.
I didn't post anything.
Your challenge photo looks like Granville Island to me.
Yes. Okay, I didn't. You're just looking at what I put in the Dropbox. Yeah, I didn't post anything online, though.
You still did something yesterday.
Right, but the way you said that, I assumed you meant my wife must have posted some pictures like out on social media or something.
If a tree falls in the forest, does Adam still get glass noodles at Granville Island?
Right. So she did post something.
No, I'm looking at your picture. Am I confusing you? I'm looking at your picture, and I'm guessing since we just spoke a day and a half ago, and here's a nice sunny picture of a nice sunny Granville Burrard Street Bridge from Granville Island, the spot I've been to many times, so I know it.
Right.
I have a picture of me and my wife in front of it.
Okay.
So I do know it.
Did my wife not post anything to social media?
Yeah, no, she did.
Okay. All right. So we're back to square one. Yes. So we went there. We actually yesterday was full spring bloom here. It was beautiful. I want to say it was 12 or 13 degrees. There wasn't a cloud in the sky. So in the morning we decided, hey, let's go to Granville Island. We haven't been there for a while. So took the kids, went down, walked around in Granville Island. I took the opportunity to take a few photos just of the scenery. Didn't take any pictures of my kids or anything else. Just a few pictures of Granville Island scenery that I thought, I like doing this. I haven't done this for a long time and didn't have to deal with, hey, can you stand over here? Oh, can you pose or any of that? I just wandered around and snapped a few shots. So teaser alert, one of them will be the photo challenge. Mm-hmm. And after that, because it was so nice, we met up with a few friends, kids, and we played baseball at the park for 2 hours. Again, this is like 2 weeks ago, we had, you know, 6 foot high snowbanks, and yesterday we're playing baseball and outside of Granville Island and all things that feel very spring-like.
Short sleeves?
No, I did have a long sleeve, but I felt like I could have. I was warm in my long sleeve.
Yes. I hear you. We had baseball practice. First outside baseball practice was today, and I overdressed and had to go down to the short sleeves, even though. So that's why I was asking.
Yeah. It was just so beautiful. I think today is supposed to be another day similar. So, although unfortunately we have our last hockey game of the season, so we will be indoors at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It's the worst possible time. So
that is terrible.
Yeah, kills a lot of the things you could do in the day. And Sarah has 18 hours of dance. I mean, that's exaggerating, but she has multiple hours of dance today. Mm-hmm. So today we don't have the luxury of all the time to enjoy all the outside activities.
And why Granville Island? Why'd you guys choose there?
That's a good question. There's a lot of things to look at, and I think it suits all of our tastes. Like, you know, we thought, okay, we can get lunch at the same time. They have a nice market. Mm-hmm. The kids like there's a kids market that the kids like to look around, and some games and things upstairs in the kids market. Lisa and I really do enjoy the food and all the different choices and stuff. So I think it's just one of those places in Vancouver that if you're going as a family, I mean, if you looked at yesterday, Saturday at 11 a.m., number one, the place is pretty packed. Number two, it's almost, I'd say 80% is just families walking around. It is kind of one of those places that something for everybody.
It really is. I used to live not too far from there. Like it was a relatively short, I used to walk there all the time. Or probably not often enough, if I'm being honest, looking back, because it's kind of cool. It's eclectic. It's got all kinds of stuff. Like you said, it's got the food fair and that and the outside area. And what a great spot on False Creek. And you can, you know, you can see the Burrard Street Bridge. You can see, spoiler alert for your challenge photo. Sorry.
Yeah.
You can ride the water taxi, but really only once.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you really need to. Our move back in the old days was when we would go see the fireworks, the, like, you know, the fireworks competition that would happen. Or still does. I think it still goes on, the celebration of light or whatever it's called.
Yeah, they I think they rebranded it, but they have it every summer.
So back in the day, and this is like 25 years ago or more probably at this point. Geez, I hate to admit that. Probably closer to 30. We would drive down to Granville Island Park there and catch the little water taxi across and hoof it. And that was a good time. So for anybody who is new to Vancouver or going to be there on vacation, definitely go check it out, especially from a photography standpoint. A lot of great street photography, a lot of great sort of odd landscape, because it's not, when you think of landscape, you think nature, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here, you're going to see all kinds of amazing, like relatively new buildings, and the architecture there is fantastic, and it's all around great day, so go check out. And it used to just be some industrial spot. Like, it's not even an island, is the kicker.
Yeah.
It's called Granville Island. It's really an area under the Granville Street Bridge that was industrial and had no other use for, so they kind of rebranded it. They built it up and built it into what it is, and it's really quite cool.
Agreed.
All right. This the sponsor this week is Granville Island. Kicking us a few coins to pump their tires. Reminder, the monthly photo challenge this month is Dutch angle.
And you don't have to be Dutch to pull this one off.
It's not going
to
hurt.
Okay.
I don't know if we've ever talked about Dutch angle. But if you don't know what it is, go ahead and Google it and then you can figure that out. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a couple weeks.
Okay.
And if you want to get really cool, you don't even say angle. It's like, I just dutched this one. And then
isn't that when you split the meal at the local eatery?
That is. Yeah, that's also that. Okay.
Gets confusing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What happens if two photographers go and share a meal?
It's a good call. I don't know. Yeah, I have no joke, no punchline for that one.
Yeah.
What if you're already dating a Dutch girl, though? How do you do that? Like, I'm assuming someone pays for quarters. You have to swing that. I'm not sure if I'm not Dutch.
Right.
At the Dutch Pannekoek House, do they automatically bring you separate bills? You have to ask for one bill.
Good question. I haven't been there for a while.
Yeah, it's been a long time for me. Long, long time. Yeah. All right. And hashtag that Hey Hosers or hashtag Two Hosers Monthly Challenge, and we will check that out and talk about it on in a couple episodes.
Okay.
Did you shoot anything interesting? Well, I guess you kind of just told us.
Yeah, I walked around Granville Island, but we'll get to that when we deal with the photo challenge. Like I said, I just kind of strolled around, made my wife occupy the kids for a little while, and I just took some pictures of what was around me.
What did you bring for camera?
I only brought the lens that was suitable for the challenge, so the 19-35 little whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
Knockoff Chinese lens that I have, and the 60. That's it.
It's a 19 to what? To 40?
I think it goes 19-35.
19-35, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And did you shoot a lot at the 19 end?
I shot nothing at the 19 end. I shot everything at the 35 end.
Gotcha.
Just thinking that, you know, this is like what it would be like if I just had a 35 millimeter lens. So that was kind of the idea. It's like, hey, this is, you know, a good walk around length, and I'm not shooting portraits. I'm shooting just stuff that's around me, landscape or scenery or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And just wanted to get the feel of that through the 35 millimeter focal length.
Gotcha. All right. And
it's funny though, even like with something like that, it is sometimes feels like, oh man, it's still a little bit close. And that's on a full frame camera, and still thinking like, again, when you have nice scenery, I guess this is the thing. And I'm sure landscape photographers can sort of understand this, probably more so than portrait photographers can, is that, you know, even at that 35 millimeter focal length, you're still thinking, man, when you have nice scenery, there's so much more I'd like to include, right? Mm-hmm. That the 35 mil doesn't often cover it.
Especially down where you are there at Granville Island, there's like there's so much goodness. Even the sort of stuff that you would not normally include, like the underside of the Granville Street Bridge, for example, it looks cool. And so you don't mind including it.
Yeah, it does look cool.
Yeah. So, all right. Because of our compressed recording schedule this week, time crunch, etc., you and I recorded like 36 hours ago.
Yeah, we just recorded.
So we're out ahead of this one, and which means we didn't have much time to go shoot anything interesting, and thus I shot nothing of interest.
Okay.
So we'll skip over that. Let's get right into the photo challenge then.
Okay.
It was 35 millimeter photo length based on our talk last week with Ian McDonald, who we're going to hear part two from this week. And this week is all X100F talk, or X100, okay. I guess, but specifically the F, that's what I have. And it features a fixed focal length of 35 mil, the equivalent of 35 mil. It's a crop sensor, but essentially you're shooting with a 35 millimeter lens. And so the challenge this week was 35 mil. So let's just go ahead and have a look at yours since we've talked about it already.
Sure.
What's going on here? Or do you want me to say what's going on here?
You can say, like, yeah, sure.
I love this spot. This is down at Granville Island, looking sort of northwest towards Yaletown.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the Burrard Street Bridge. Fantastic. Just a real landmark of Vancouver. We could do a whole episode, and we couldn't, on the Burrard Street Bridge. But what it means, Art Deco Bridge, and when it was built. And I kind of have a fascination with it, which, have we talked about it on the show before?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Real quick then, for those who haven't heard, it is a really cool looking bridge. They started building it before the Great Depression. Like it was, the ball was rolling on that. And which means they had some money then to make it look good. And then the bridge that essentially that you just camera right where you are is called the Granville Street Bridge, which is sort of the main artery in and out of downtown. It was built sort of afterwards, like after World War II, when there was no money. And so it's far more functional, not nearly as good looking as the Burrard Street Bridge.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you chose that. And then we have False Creek and all the boats that are, you know, moored there. It's really, really cool looking place with the brand new Yaletown where Expo 86 was almost 32 years ago now. That was the former Expo lands, and that was all been built up in the last few years into what you're looking at now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And water taxi, you mentioned water taxis. There's a couple of water taxis in that shot too.
Indeed.
Yeah, coming to and from. There's one right dead center in front of the buildings. It's little, but that's a water taxi for anyone who is, interested. They come from False Creek to the city, right?
So, mm-hmm. Out to yeah. Sunset Beach or right across to Yaletown or something. This really is much. It must be sponsored by Granville Island today for all the info we're dropping on that. I think the key here is like I like this in black and white. You could have done this in color. I'm sure the colors were fantastic. But
the colors were good. It was weird, and I said the same thing to Lisa. I mean, it's pretty rare where you get a absolutely perfectly clear, like it was a sunny day, perfectly nice blue sky. This time of day, the colors really pop. This is at like, I don't know what it is. It's 11 a.m. or something when I took this photo, maybe just before that. The colors are beautiful, but then I flipped it over to black and white just because, I don't know, city architecture, Vancouver, it felt like it should be black and white to me. And I did the black and white and I looked at it and I thought, I like it much better. But and then I thought, is it just me? So then I showed Lisa the color in the black and white, and she said, absolutely the black and white. And I was, again, trying to figure out why, and I'm still not sure why, but black and white just looks better. Maybe it's the contrast, maybe it's the buildings, the bridge, I'm not sure. Maybe it's just how clear a day it was, and the black and white really, really pops because of the bit of gradient there is in the sky too. Yes. Like where the buildings are in the sky, it just looks so good in black and white. And again, the colors, I'd say fine. Like, it looks good. It just looks better in black and white.
Agreed. And to me, it is the sky. It's the fact that, I mean, with all the buildings, the only thing that you can't imagine, I mean, the buildings you can sort of figure out, you know that none of them are painted, you know, dark blue or anything like that. The only thing that you know, the uninformed viewer wouldn't know is that the bridge itself is that kind of yellowy orange color.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's I'd say that. I'm not yellowy more than orange, but yeah.
The two main pillars there, I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, you wouldn't guess that, but the rest of it you can fill in. You can fill in the blue sky and the reflections on the water, so it seems like unnecessary, like you just want to do it. And the gradient in the sky, I think, is what makes this picture really, really work.
And I think that if you do it in color, then the sky becomes the principal focal point because it's so blue and the colors is so crisp, sharp, whatever you want to call it, versus you take the sky out of it and the gradient, it becomes much more about the actual landscape. I think that's part of it. Sometimes the blue sky is just magnetic to the eye.
And so what if you had been walking around with your 85 mil? Would you have gotten this shot?
Oh, I would have gotten nothing, or I would have had to done like a full, you know, a composition where, you know, I had to stitch it together.
Right.
Which I probably would have never taken.
You would not have bothered.
Yeah, probably not.
No.
So this does remind you. I mean, I never take these pictures to begin with, but I took this photo and I really liked it. I thought, it's nice to have some just scenic pictures of Vancouver. I never do this. And this is, to me, like one that I could put in a frame in the bathroom or something. Or, you know, like that kind of photo. Mm-hmm. Or if I wanted to make my own postcard Vancouver, like this would be a photo that I could send to somebody just being like, yeah, Granville Island.
And what did that lens cost you?
That lens cost me nothing. It was like $125 or something. It was sub 200, whatever I paid for it a couple of years ago.
Used.
Yeah, I think it was used, but it might have been new. Like, again, I think the guy had a bunch of them. Yeah.
Right.
Either way, it was dirt cheap.
Right. So the point being, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to blow the bank. This is a very crisp shot. Probably shot at around F8, F11 maybe.
Yeah, in that range. I think F9, so yeah, right in that range.
Yeah, so you can tell that's right in the wheelhouse of where you're going to get the really crisp image out of that lens. But, you know, so wide open, it's probably not going to be as nice.
No.
You know, even if you wanted that soft bokeh effect, shot at, you know, wide open at whatever that's going to be, 5-6 at that with that lens. I don't know how, at the 35 mil end of the zoom lens, what is it? Is it an F5.6?
Yeah, I think it's F5.6, yeah.
That's the widest it'll open.
Yeah.
So even if you're looking for that, you know, really nice bokeh, you're probably not going to get the sharpest image, but here, who cares with that lens? Here at around F9, which I can't believe I just said, really F8.11 split.
Sure.
It looks fantastic, so money well spent on that lens.
Yeah. Yeah, and if anybody out there is like in my boat where they take, you know, 98% of their photos as portraits of family or of their kids, and just wants to you know, dip their toes in the water of landscapes or just having the ability to wide angles, I certainly would look for something like this.
What's the brand name on that one?
Oh, I don't know.
Tokina?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Tokina, or it might even be a knockoff of Tokina.
A knockoff.
I don't know. I'll post a picture of the actual lens for people at some point.
I don't think Tokina is a knockoff. I was just making a knockoff of a knockoff joke.
Okay.
Tokina is an actual company.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not some guy in the back alley just piecing together old lens parts. So, all right. So let's have a look at mine. Here's my shot.
Okay. So this isn't you, right?
No. Yeah, I lost 80 pounds.
Oh, I can't. I'm looking at it on the small picture here. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm gonna open it up a little bit here. All right. It's still, yeah. I mean, if you said this was you 10 years ago, then I'd say, oh, I could see that.
Well, I'm not overweight by any means, but this is a kid on our baseball team who is in like ridiculous shape. So,
okay. So he's showing off his ability to run up and jump off one of those big, cement blocks and do a backflip.
No running, just standing backflip.
Oh, so he just climbed up on top of that and then did the flip off?
Indeed.
Yeah, okay. But he's so high that this is assisted, of course, from that block that you see in the frame.
What are you talking? No.
Well, he's not just standing.
Oh, no, he's on the, assisted. Yeah. He was standing on the smaller block, bottom right-hand corner with the grass on it.
Right, yeah.
That's the one he's flipping off of.
Yeah.
But yes, he's standing on that and just doing a flip off of that.
Okay. All right. Gotcha.
So the background behind this shot is we had a 36-hour window from our last show, and I thought, oh boy, I need to get a shot. Couldn't get it yesterday. Didn't have anything going on. So I brought my camera to practice today. As I mentioned, our first outdoor practice, and thought, okay, I'll get something. But nothing came up. But I brought the X100. I brought a flash. With the remote. And went and I said, oh, in behind our park is this sort of, I don't even know what, it's not a BMX thing. It's, you know, the guys who do the mountain biking, but they kind of jump up and down on the back tire and stuff like that. What is that called?
Yes.
Obstacle course, but on a, bike.
I don't know what it's called, and but we get it. We get it. We don't need to know
the official name. It's kind of dumb.
It's a thing.
Is it a thing?
It's a thing for them.
I mean, it's a thing. It's like bike parkour for all I care.
Sure.
So we have one of those little areas right in behind, right by our field. And so as we're leaving, I said, oh, I'll snap a photo. Hey guys, I need a photo, 35mm photo, and for the challenge this week. So I had a bunch of, three of the guys line up and just kind of stand. I'll do like a fake album cover. That's my plan. So three of the guys, including this kid here, just sort of stood on, I said, I'll use all these kind of obstacles as sort of something interesting. And so we shot the three of them, and it turns out it wasn't that interesting.
Okay.
And so I was like, oh, all right. I was going to use it. I'm like, all right, it's starting to rain, so guess what? I'm going to use it. Adam will be online in 20 minutes, so let's get going. As we're leaving, this kid here, Lewis, he jokes. He's like, yeah, I'll just do a backflip off of here. And I thought he was kidding. Except for he wasn't. He did a backflip. And I said, oh, let's do that again. So we ended up shooting it about 15 more times.
Did you really do 15 backflips?
10 to 15. I lost count.
Okay. Wow.
Maybe 8 to 10. Probably in there. But I was just trying to get it just right. Like getting the light right and having somebody hold, like I had a voice-activated light stand, essentially, with an off-camera flash. And where should it be? And it's starting to rain, and I have 5 minutes to get this. I had no idea the kid could do this, so I wasn't really prepared to set the scene to do something really cool. Like if I'd had a couple hours ahead of time, I knew about this, I could have envisioned something awesome.
Okay.
And maybe lit it a little bit different like that. But as it was, I thought, okay, here we go. Let's line it up and kill the ambient a little bit. Not all the way. I still want to see what's going on back there, but make it a little bit darker. We'll light him and go from there.
Gotcha.
And that's what this is.
Okay. Yeah. No, I think it's pretty good. It's like you said, there's elements here that I think would make a good photo. I'm not sure it needs to be 35. I mean, it's certainly fine for 35, but just in terms of the context of the challenge, 35mm versus, if this was a 50 and you just step back 10 feet, it's the same photo, isn't it?
Probably. I mean, you might see a little difference with the depth of field or something, but case, I feel like the depth of field's a little too deep.
Well, and I think, again, the idea being with the 35, not so much a critique of your photo, but just in general is like, yeah, sometimes you want to include more background because there's things you want to see that you're not going to see with 85 or 70 to 200. And in this case, I think based on where you are, I don't think it really matters. Like we don't need to see any more of that background or not. I'm not thinking about good or bad photo because I like the photo. I'm just thinking about in terms of 35mm. To me, this doesn't matter. I mean, I do like the wide angle. I just think you could have easily achieved that with any of your other lenses, just because you probably have enough room here.
Possibly. In this particular case, I probably couldn't have achieved it with those because I would now be shooting with the DSLR, which changes the sync speed.
Oh, I see.
So that's more specific to this camera, to the Leaf shutter camera, than it is the 35mm focal length, which for this, I believe I ended up dialing this in because I shot a couple. This is probably one of the last ones I shot. And earlier on, I was getting a little bit of motion blur, which was kind of cool. But I thought, well, let's just see what happens if we stop him entirely. And so earlier on, I was shooting at like 1/250th of a second, which was giving me a little bit of blur. And this way, normally what you'd end up doing is you'd stop down and at 1/250th, that's fine. But you'd get the flash dialed into like 1/64th. So it's really not going off for very long. So that's what you will use to sort of eliminate the motion blur.
Right.
But here I was like, oh, I have the luxury of being able to sync at 1/1000th and faster. But at f/5.6 is what I think I shot this at. I can sync at 1/1000th of a second, even if I'm at half power on the flash, and it still is going to stop the action. Right. So in that respect, yes, focal length, not much to do with it. I kind of like the fact that it's environmental, not necessarily this environment.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. But again, he dropped this on me.
I would do this at the skate park. You would get something awesome if he's brave enough to do this over concrete instead of grass.
I think he is.
I'm just thinking about, you know, like if you have skate parks out there with all the graffiti and whatnot, mm-hmm. this would look super awesome in that environment.
Indeed, we do.
That's kind of where my first thought. I'm like, I really like what's going on here. I wish this was an skate park instead of like out in the woods. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Out in the woods is kind of random, but, there is that, but it's
still cool.
Yeah. This will be every week for every home game. We do a cover for the Hawks magazine and not this one, but we will redo it, but he'll get his own cover doing a backflip like Ozzie Smith.
Well, he'll be in full baseball gear.
Baseball gear on the field.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
Not our field, but a nice one.
Okay.
We'll find a good one and have him do a backflip there and definitely post that one. All right. Again, with the 35mm, this is not specifically why I bought the camera. I kind of wanted to go around town and shoot some sort of street photography style stuff in Tubingen, which is an amazing spot to do that, especially when you get some nice sunshine, but in the 36 hours since we issued this challenge, there was no nice sunshine and no opportunity to do that. But I'll definitely get a lot of use out of that this summer, shooting around there.
Cool.
And with that, that brings us to our topic this week, which is part two of the interview with Ian McDonald, where we talk specifically about the X100. So without further ado, here's part two with me and Ian. And we're back with Ian McDonald. Ian, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Well, let's be honest. We didn't cut. This is just part two.
That's right.
I like to show people behind the curtain. But we talked last time about street photography and lots of photography, but street photography in general. And I want to get specific about the X100.
Okay.
Why the X100? For you?
Wow, that's yeah. It's such a loaded question. The X100 was a game changer. You know, if you really think about where the industry was at 7 years ago, Canon and Nikon were the huge players, and still are, of course, but were the huge players. DSLRs were top of the food chain. Point and shoots were dying because the iPhones and Android phones were taking over. It was a really interesting, changing marketplace. And then, really out of nowhere, Fujifilm dropped this camera, the X100. And it hit a lot of us. If you talk to a lot of the early adopters, some of whom that are now brand ambassadors for Fujifilm, like myself, a lot of us were at a stage where we weren't enjoying working with large DSLRs anymore. I know, speaking for myself, I was at a point where I had a backpack. And it had, you know, two full frame bodies. It had a bunch of glass, the whole thing probably weighed 20 or 25 pounds. Mm-hmm. And I hated taking it out. I hated taking it out. You know, you go through that stage as a photographer, I think, where you kind of pride yourself on having that big backpack full of equipment. And I got over that really quickly. Right. And so photography, because of the equipment demands at that point in my life, it just wasn't fun anymore.
What were you shooting with?
Nikon. I was a Nikon guy big time. And so the usual, you know, what was it at the time? Probably the D3, I imagine. And then all the assortments, the trinity of lenses, the 24-70, the 70-2, all that. Mm-hmm. And then I saw this little X100. And for me, it was almost a Hail Mary. It was almost an opportunity to say, I'm going to take this one little camera that has a fixed lens. The only focal length I will have on it is 35 millimeters. And it, you know, its operations, it harkens back to the film days. It has an aperture ring on the lens. It has a separate dial for shutter speed and exposure compensation. It felt like a manual, mechanical, thoughtful, take your time and make pictures kind of camera. And so when I bought it, not really with any huge expectations other than I needed to try something different than use the stuff in my 25-pound backpack, it just changed everything about my photography. Leaving the house with a little camera slung on your shoulder, an extra battery and memory card in your pocket, and no bag, it was so liberating. And then the next thing I found about it was that only having one focal length to see the world in made me work so much harder to get my pictures, because I think I fell into the trap of being a little bit lazy. You know, it's so with a zoom, you walk up, you plant your feet, you start zooming around, you know, you don't necessarily, if you're not careful, you don't necessarily put a lot of time into your photos, and having a fixed 35 millimeter focal length made me do that. So what it ended up doing is slowing me down. And it made me get very cerebral and cognitive about my photography again. And then the third thing that just sold me completely was the image quality, because Fujifilm's image quality is absolutely stunning. They have taken the knowledge gained from, you know, 80 years of making film, and they've taken those color profiles and those amazing black and white films, and they've actually put that knowledge into these cameras. And so it was kind of the three-way hit of something small, something light, something that had a fixed focal length that made me become more thoughtful about my photography again. And then the end results were spectacular too. And so when you put all that together, I was hooked right from the beginning.
That was why I've had my eye on one since they came out, but just I did not pick one up until the 100F came out.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, it was a few months later. I waited to see how it went. But I loved one of my favorite cameras. I have a very old film camera called a Canonette.
I know the Canonette, sure.
I bought mine in Vancouver. I think it was about $20, maybe $15, you know, mm-hmm. that you can find them all over the place. Love that camera. Absolutely. And yep. It's relatively the same. I think it's a 45 mil lens.
Yeah.
But generally the same. And so I love that. I have a little Yashica Electro M, a very tiny camera. I love that as well.
Yep.
I wanted to do that. And now I'm a Canon guy. Mm-hmm. Not for any good reason. Just the first, back when I got my first DSLR, it came down to the prosumer. I bought a 40D, Canon 40D. The Nikon version was probably $400 more expensive at the time.
Yeah.
So I went with Canon. That was it. And once you go down that path, now you start acquiring lenses, etc. You're down that path.
Well, now you're in the ecosystem.
Sure.
Right? Yeah.
And so I've been a Canon guy. I have three Canon bodies. The 40D will not die. I've had it.
You still have it.
I've had it for 11 or 12 years
That's
now.
Awesome. Yeah.
And like I say, I preach to everybody who wants to become a good photographer, buy yourself a beater, something that you don't mind smashing around, taking out. It's been in the Mediterranean. Been in swimming pools in the Pacific. I don't care where I take it. If it dies tomorrow, it owes me nothing.
Yes.
And so that won't go away. It's almost almost dead. Won't quite die. I have a 5D Mark II, which I use a lot for video that I shoot, mm-hmm. and then a Mark I, which I happen to love, the old Canon 5D classics.
Yes.
But I had all this, and I generally, I find myself when I would go out, I've always been a prime lens snob.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was, you know, shooting with one focal length was not the issue, but I never had a 35 mil lens.
Right.
And so that I found to be a big transition, seeing everything in 35 millimeters only.
Yes.
How did you find that?
You know, because I came from a strong background in portraiture, it was really interesting because I love, for portraiture, I love the 85 millimeter focal length, full frame equivalent, right? So for my Fuji, it's kind of a 56 would be the equivalent lens. And there was a time as I was going through the early years of being a photographer and really figuring out what genres I loved, where I did a lot of wildlife. So, you know, now you're at your 300 millimeter plus focal lengths. So to go just to a 35 mil, it was a struggle at first, but you know, it was a struggle for like a day. And what I mean by that is I became so inspired, and that's never gone away. Like I have four cameras now and I have lenses for different professional settings, but you know, I was on the X100F beta testing team. So I got one about 3 months before launch. And I worked with it and with the managers at Fujifilm to give them feedback on the firmware and stuff like that. And there's about 50 of us. Usually there's about 50 of us that will beta test any given camera, right? And I was as excited opening the box for the X100F, which is the fourth iteration of that camera, as I was the very first time I bought one, you know, 7 years ago. And the reason for it is because when I hold it in my hands, and a lot of those decision-making things that I have to deal with at weddings and stuff like that, like focal lengths and lighting and all that stuff, those just aren't in my head. Mm-hmm. All that's in my head is going out and seeing and composing and capturing. The way the camera feels, the fact that it has certain, what some people would call limitations, but to me, they're liberating elements. It just lets me hold it, not think about certain technical aspects of photography, and go out and be creative, knowing that I can be as creative as I want and the camera is remarkably capable and can keep up with me. And I love it. I you know, I'm leaving for Hawaii fairly soon and it will be the only camera I take on vacation. I was just in Amsterdam and Paris 5 months ago. It was basically the only camera. I took another one that stayed in the safe as a backup, but it's really the only one I shot with. I was just in San Francisco in January. It was the only camera I brought. It honestly, if I don't have a professional need for something wider or something more telly, the X100 series is all I need to make the work that I see in my head.
That was the big impetus for me buying one myself. Exactly what you said. It is so unbelievable. Like I went to Los Angeles a couple months ago. Same thing. That's a lot. And yeah. I'd only had it for a day, and so that was a little intimidating.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. You know, I don't really know how this works, but do you shoot? Like you mentioned all the Fuji profiles, which I love, mm-hmm. by the way. Those show up in JPEG.
Yes.
Do you shoot RAW or do you shoot JPEG or do you do both?
Depends on my application. One of the things I'll do quite often on the street is I will shoot JPEG, but you can bracket the film simulations, as you probably know, on the Fujifilm X series.
I accidentally know that, yes.
Yeah, fair enough. Yes. That's how we discover most things, because mm-hmm. heaven forbid we read the manuals. So, you know, what I'll sometimes ask it to do is to capture a copy of this image in Acros, which is my favorite black and white film simulation, mm-hmm. a copy of it in classic chrome, which is kind of reminiscent of Kodachrome from back in the day. And, you know, I actually wish you could set an option to only bracket two film simulations, but it brackets three. So I usually just do Provia, which is kind of their standard film. Color film simulation. Mm-hmm. And so the really nice thing about that, because you can adjust the highlights and the shadows and do all your toning in camera, is that I get three JPEGs and my post-production on them quite often is just deleting the ones I don't use. If I choose to shoot RAW, you can actually apply those film simulations in Lightroom in post-production. So you do have the opportunity to apply them in camera or in post if you use Lightroom.
Can you how do you do it in Lightroom? Do you have to know the settings and kind of dial it in yourself?
Nope. They're all built in. They're in the camera calibration pane down at the bottom of the develop module.
Well, see, I learned something new just now.
Yeah. So if you take a raw file into Lightroom and go into the develop module, you just shoot straight down to the calibration panel, mm-hmm. and you can actually go in and you can choose all of the. I think there's a slight difference between Fuji's in-camera and Lightroom's, but it's not a big enough of a difference that it bothers me. Mm-hmm. And then you can just apply it in post-production.
Oh, see, what I have been doing is essentially shooting raw, and then when I want to apply that filter, I do it in-camera. I discovered that you can do that. I like yourself, I don't read the manual. I figure if they can invent a camera, surely I can figure out how to use it.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
But then you find out they invented things that you don't even know exist.
Oh, yeah.
And so maybe you kind of want to thumb through it a little bit.
You know, one of the things about the Fuji cameras is that I actually would venture a guess, and I know this might be a controversial thing to say, but I bet you if you could pull all the brands and all their users, that you would have a higher percentage of people shooting JPEG primarily on Fuji than the other brands. And it's because they've got it right. You know, the way you can tone the curve in camera is amazing, but the film simulations, because they're not just filters, right? That's one of the things is that, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine who shoots a lot of Canon, and he goes, well, they've just got filters. It's like Instagram. The film simulations are not filters. They're very different than that concept of just laying something over top. And it comes from, if you go back in the day, Fuji brought in the same people that actually made the film stock back in the day. And they had them work with the engineers to turn that into digital ones and zeros and translate it to the cameras. Mm-hmm. So this isn't just something they created out of the blue. They brought in their institutional knowledge, and the JPEGs that come out of Fuji's are amazing. One of the things that you see happen a lot is people will shoot RAW plus JPEG because they're used to that from shooting with other brands. And then they realize that they spend 10 minutes in Lightroom trying to make the RAW file look like the JPEG that came out of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they make a switch in their mind to, well, maybe I can just get away with shooting JPEGs. So for me now, it really just depends on application. If the lighting's tricky, I'll normally shoot compressed RAW just because it saves some space on the disc.
Mm-hmm.
Weddings, I always shoot RAW because you need to give yourself that latitude, of course. Most client work, I'll shoot RAW just to give myself the latitude. But if I'm just going out shooting on the street under fairly normal lighting conditions, I know the JPEGs are going to get the job done.
One of the things I like, there's many reasons that I wanted the X100. It's been on my list for a while, my wish list, and kind of had to justify it to myself. But one of the things that I really liked about it, going back to street photography, is that it is essentially invisible, despite looking awesome. Like, it is a really good-looking camera.
It is, yeah, it is.
Which people always comment on it. I get a lot of comments, oh, wow, like how old is that camera? Well,
mm-hmm. Is that a film camera? That one comes up a lot,
all the
right?
time. All the time. Yeah. And it really is. It really is a great looking camera, retro looking. Not why I bought it, just a bonus.
Yeah. So you're not going to be sitting in a coffee shop with your artisan moleskin notebook taking notes on your reconditioned table or anything like that?
I'm not saying I'm not going to do that.
Fair enough.
I'm not going to commit to that.
My reaction with all of the Fujifilm cameras, because I use several of their interchangeable lens cameras for my wedding work and whatnot too. The reaction from people is always, if they do see it, because at weddings, most of the guests now have larger cameras than I have when I'm shooting.
Mm-hmm.
If they do notice it at all, the compliment, the communication I get from them is either curiosity or it's a compliment about the camera. It's a really interesting conversation piece. And you're right, on the street, it's so small that people just don't notice it in your hand.
And I found, even with my kids who go through phases of, yes, daddy, take my picture, no, daddy, do not.
Yes.
With my kids even, and they know I have a camera, it disappears there too. And so I find that the big 70 to 200 lens, it affects the demeanor of the person you're taking a photo of.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And we forget that as photographers. You've done a lot of portraiture, have you not?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, we point these huge lenses at our subjects sometimes. And every now and then you get in front of it yourself and mm-hmm. you realize how intimidating it is. And you just don't get that from these small little Fujifilm cameras. That whole, even their lenses are, you know, in some cases half the size of what they would be for their Canon or Nikon equivalents. And I find that's actually a benefit, not only in my street photography, but also in my professional photography, because I'm much more able to keep a rapport going with my client rather than having this huge camera and lens get between me and the client, which happens sometimes.
One of the other things I absolutely loved, and it was very challenging at first. It's a different animal than the Canon.
Yes.
Just different menus, buttons. The muscle memory took a while.
Yep.
And I'm there now, so I'm really happy with it. But one of the things that was really very different was the 35 mil focal length, because it includes way more.
Yep.
Everything is either, you can see much wider, and there's much more in focus in the background. So now you have to pay total attention to everything in your image.
Yeah.
But what I noticed with my kids' photos, I'm looking back on a bunch. My daughter's six, my son is four. Mm-hmm. I'm catching up on photo albums. I'm redoing a couple photo albums from when they're the first couple of years. And I shot a lot with the 85 mil on a full frame.
Yep.
And so their photo albums, they look like magazines. They do look like there are excellent images.
Yes. Yes.
However, they don't include as much of the environment as they should.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think there's two pieces to that. I think that one of the things when people come to Fujifilm, or, you know, when you make any big change to something that's different, there's an adjustment period. And, you know, you can almost use the analogy of somebody trying to go from Windows to a Macintosh OS 10 or back and forth, right? You can't jump onto a different operating system and then just try to use it the way you've used your other system, right? And I think for people that come from the Nikon world or the Canon world or the Pentax world, when you first pick up a Fuji camera, you have to pick it up with an open mind. You know, yes, it's still aperture, shutter speed, ISO, but the ergonomics are different. And so you have to approach it with an open mind. But that's the technical. The next part is what you're describing in terms of focal lengths. If you are holding a camera that only has a 35 millimeter lens, you can't expect to get that beautiful isolating portrait that you might get with like a Canon 135 F2, which is one of my all-time favorite portrait lenses. Mm-hmm. You have to say, okay, well, this lens means I need to think environmental portraiture more than I need to think isolation. And so if I ever see people that are frustrated with the change, it's almost always because they picked up this thing that's totally different and then expected to achieve the same results. And when you start thinking environmental portraiture, though, to me, what that means is your portraits become more storytelling, because now the environment is almost as much of the story as the person is. And so you do have to be more careful, making sure that your frame is clean and not cluttered and that kind of thing. But there's usually more of a story to the frame than the 1.2 portrait where the background's totally blurred out. And I kind of like that.
As do I. I find I'm gravitating towards that a lot more. And, you know, looking back, thinking, geez, I kind of wish I'd shot, you know, a little wider back then. I remember now what was going on, but it'd be nice to have, you know, a little more of the hospital or you know, what, however far back I go. But, Ian, that is fantastic. Where can people go to find more info about you?
Yeah, IanMacDonaldPhotography.com is my website, and that's MAC, IanMacDonaldPhotography.com. Really active on Instagram, IanMacDonaldPhotography. And I've got a large portfolio and some stuff up on Fujifilm's main website where they have sort of a section for all the global brand ambassadors. But my personal website and Instagram, I would say, are the two best places.
And go check that out, and maybe you can go meet them in Paris.
Oh, Paris is going to be awesome. But Vancouver and Toronto are pretty damn cool, I have to say.
They are. All right. Thanks a lot for taking the time.
My pleasure. Good talking to you.
And we're back.
Yes.
Ian and I is the proper English.
Ian.
Not me and Ian. Me and Ian. Ian and me? Who says that?
I don't know. You just
did. I did. Indeed, I did. Yeah. All right, Adam. So what did you learn from these interviews?
I learned that I like Ian more than I like you.
Oh, yeah. That was a real tough putt.
I've never met Ian.
No, me neither.
I think that's part of the allure.
Yeah.
I've met you.
Yeah. No, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Challenge for next week.
Okay.
Got one.
Meet Ian.
Well, you could go on one of his on one of his photo workshops. He's got a couple in Vancouver. He's got one. He's doing one in Paris this year, so that's a little closer to me. So perhaps I'll just pop on over to Paris. It's a train ride. It's only a couple hours on the TGV. You know the one that Mission Impossible and Tom Cruise jumps into the helicopter tunnel and all that stuff.
Yeah, sure.
I'll take that one over. I'll pop on over to that one. Well, that was through the tunnel.
Okay.
I'm going the different direction. Just see if you're keeping track at home, which you're not.
Okay.
Yeah. Next week's challenge is dominant color green.
Oh, hooray. I've been waiting for this one.
We've done red. We've done blue. We did blue, then red. That's the order we did it in, right?
Yes.
And now this one is green. You see a theme emerging. I'm sure you do. But I hope it might be ambitious. Are we going to have enough green with springtime coming? Is it going to happen in time for the next challenge? Let's find out.
Okay. I can't wait to see.
Or find something else green. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
All right. And the monthly challenge for March. A reminder, that is Dutch Angle. Hashtag that Hey Hosers on Instagram or Two Hosers Monthly Challenge, and we'll check that out and talk about it, and Adam will tell you why you've disappointed him.
Right.
In a future episode.
Yeah.
All right, Adam, websites, where can people go to find your stuff?
AdamSchwartz.ca.
And you can find mine at AlanAtridge.com or the two of us at TwoHosers.com, where you can find all the links, pictures, and everything we just talked about. And hopefully this week, we sounded like a million darn dollars. We're going to find out.
Do you want me to say
something? I don't know. Maybe. You're the one who blew it last week.
I thought you were just summing this whole thing up.
Yeah, I was. You've already checked out. You're already in your car driving home. And that's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.